Well, hello everyone and welcome to our next edition of the True Turf Super Series, where we get to find out a little bit more about our customers, but also a bit about greenkeeping and agronomy around the world. And very pleased to have Stuart Ross with us tonight from Houghton Golf Club, all the way from South Africa. Stuart, welcome along.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, no, very happy to have you on. And we've connected a little bit across social media and in the past, and we've really appreciated you wanting to come on. And I suppose something, we've done a few episodes in Australia, we've done the UK, we've done the US and a few other places as well, but now we get to find out a little bit about greenkeeping in South Africa. Tell us a little bit about Houghton Golf Club, where you are at the moment and how long you've been there.
Well, Nick, Houghton Golf Club's it's over 100 years old. We had our centenary 2022. It's a very popular golf course. It's in the top 30 out of about 450 golf courses here. The membership's strong. We actually got a Cretel membership. It was redesigned in 2010. We opened with Jack Nicklaus had redesigned. They got very undulating greens, which is a challenge to maintain, especially if you consider your puttable areas. They are quite minimal. But it's a great course. We've always got high standards, a strong membership. I always hear guys talking about their golf courses and they say that their membership demands fast greens and all that. But really, in reality, that's every single golf club. If we look at the different budgets the guys have, the same thing I'm hearing all the time is the guys want quick greens, they want fast greens. And that's kind of where my journey with True Turf started. I did what the guys used to use in the old days is put on those rollers on the triplex mowers and then go out. And now if I look back in those days, it was a bit different to the True Turf.
Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose the principles have grown from there. And at the end of the day, looking to try and create those smooth and true putting surfaces that members really like to see.
Yes, true. When we started rolling, I noticed with the undulations, with the triplex, I noticed that our mounds started yellowing off quite a lot. And that's actually what started my journey to look for something else, something that would actually benefit the club, as well as not be such a headache for me, ergonomically. We managed to get hold of the agents of True Turf, and we asked for a demo. And I had the Greens Committee guys come with my stump meter, and the guy rolled two lines, and I took my stump, and we went about 2 feet more. And so the guys kind of said, "Well, leap the roller here." And that's the start of our, well, that was the beginning of my journey with True Turf, and then starting to play with the attachments and other guys know about it, because a lot of guys don't actually know about those attachments. And to me, that's just a game changer.
Yeah. What's the primary attachment you're using on your roller, Stuart?
I use the Spiker.
And how do you find that with the engagement of it? Obviously, you're looking to create some a little bit more aerification in the soil, or are you using a spot spike, or how are you implementing that from a roller into your rolling?
I use it as often as possible, as often as I can. My veggie draining, I'll just go and use the spiker there as well, or slicer. I just find that it helps to open up the canopy a bit, because I only do it once a month, that is veggie draining. And I roll quite often. I double cut the greens quite often. So the surfaces are pretty firm. And then I haven't actually taken it and done it in localized areas. You know, I feel that if I'm going to do it once, I'll do it all the entire green. And then usually I'll put down a fungicide with it, or wetting agent. You know, I've just found that it's just works so much better. It's just really, if anything, it's taken out a lot of equipment that I used to use in the past. You know, put on the slices on your triplex, and then go and use that. Now you're doing it, and members don't even know I'm doing it. Whereas before, you know, people would see it and why are you on that machine? And so it's really been great. And I have shown the guys around you as well. Just, you know, those attachments, because a lot of the guys that just have a roll and, you know, they just roll.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's a very useful addition to be able to put the attachments in play, because as you say, otherwise you've got to bring another piece of equipment in to actually facilitate that. Whereas whether you're leaving it in and engaging the whole way around, and obviously the attachment sitting in the middle of the roller. You've got the smoothing rollers on one end and the drive roller on the other end. So you are getting a smoothing of the area that you're spiking as well as you go.
It's so easy to engage as well. You know, there's no rocket science. The guy doesn't have to get off or do anything. You just, right as it sits, he just engages and goes for it.
Yeah. What's the grass type you've got on your greens, Chip?
Say again?
What's the grass type that you've got on your greens? What's the surface?
I've got the Pin A1, A4, and I had got some power as well. But simply Pin A1, A4.
Yeah. So you talk about your vertidroning, your spiking. What other maintenance practices are you putting in over the course of the journey around the grass?
Well, you know, everything from top dressing, obviously your aeration, holotine. But that can only be once a year. But top dress, I'm pretty regimental on. And that's the other thing I use with the slicer is after I've top dressed, I engage the slicing, and then I'll roll over it and it disappears. The reason why I started investigating this, the slicing with your tree tube, is that I noticed my water feed that I'm getting at, it's every now and again it gets quite badly contaminated with effluent water. And then unfortunately we've got no way of diluting that, or I shouldn't say diluting it, we can't get it out the system, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Don't get damaged, it's in there. You got your nitrates, your bicarbs, all that stuff. And some seasons it will get really bad, and obviously you've got to irrigate your greens, so you put in that, you could say, fertilizer on your greens, and I was starting to get a bit of excessive thatch. No matter what I was doing, the beans were just growing. Obviously, I increased my top dressing ratios, your ready cutting, all that kind of stuff. But I needed something where I could get that sand into the thatch that was forming. And then I discovered those slices, and then I started rolling, so I'd actually go a little bit deeper than would what normally be. And I was actually pushing the sand in between that thatch. So I was basically diluting the thatch, and I just saw it, but really worked well. You know, a season later, I took another profile, and I saw that there's so many benefits to it. You know, you're also opening it up, letting the microbes get in there and help take down the thatch. So it was a no-brainer for me. And God, I was just happy that I discovered that, because also it's, you know, sleepless nights. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? Because you also don't want to interrupt clay. You know, they'll be told, do you want a very dry night? Whoa, how am I going to be able to play for it? No, guys. So now if I say, listen, guys, I'm going to throw sand on it and I'm going to spark and all this, I'm going to be, whoa, no, what's going on? We've got membership days on the Thursday. We can't have this. But by Thursday, no one sees anything. Even by Wednesday, you're running the sea.
And how do you see the minimization of disease, I suppose, in your greens? You know, you talk about the thatch buildup, obviously more thatch, you know, and the challenges you've got with the water quality as well, that can lead to disease. Obviously, you're putting in some practices in those, but you're are rolling week on week. Do you see that certainly keeping the diseases down in the greens as well?
Well, I'll tell you, the last time my dollar spot was, I don't know if you guys went into a lockdown for COVID. I think you did. But that was the last time with dollar spot, because I was still coming into work and all the staff had gone home. So I come in to cut certain days and do other, you know, still cut the rough and all that kind of stuff. And the last time I had dollar spot was during COVID, because we weren't roaming.
Okay.
Yes. And when I tell guys, no, I haven't had dollar spot, the guys are actually amazed still today. Last year we held the Joburg Open. It's DP sanctioned, and I was speaking to some of the agronomists. And they were saying, you know, you got to, guys, we had so much rain. The guy was saying, you know, you got to put certain stuff down. You're saying I should use boscalic acid, but it's perfect for dollar spot. And I said, Ken, I haven't had dollar for X amount of years. And he said, are you serious? And I said, yes. And I explained to him, I said, there's something rolling that's doing it. And he's a Spanish guy, Ishmael. He's really taken back. He's surprised, you know. So, definitely no dollar.
Now, we've certainly seen that a lot.
But before I actually come, I'm busy doing my budgetary forecasts for the season, and I'm working out my chemical program. And I'm kind of seeing, okay, just always like to tweak it, and I'm seeing, okay, this chemical can sort that out and that. And I know what I usually get. And the dollar spot page, I just skip past it. So, I don't have to worry about the different chemical costs.
Yeah, and that's great feedback, and it's also something we're seeing from a lot of our customers around the world, is that through consistent rolling, and Dr. Tom Nicolai refers to it as well, and the creation of that sort of healthy bacterial layer in the soil, which fights these diseases, then saves money at the end of the day, because you're not spending it on chemicals or other things that you need to do. You're able to invest that into other ways to maintain the golf course.
Yes, so it's brilliant. Well, one thing I'd like to look at is rolling fairways. I see that's what you guys are busy with, and it's something. I'm not saying this season, but something I definitely never looked at. And you know, I get dollar spot like you can't believe on these fairways. Actually, in the distance, they almost look yellow at some time. So I'm thinking, well, let's see if that can help there, but obviously I'll have to do a trial. But it's nice to know that, you know, you guys are staying current. You know, you're coming up with new ideas and new ways of thinking.
Yeah, very much so. We're just in the prototyping stage of our toe-behind fairway roller at the moment. We have our Brumby that's out. That's a wider swath as well for rolling. And once again, as you look at, I'm not sure, what height are you cutting your fairways at the moment, fairways and greens? What are the height cuts there?
Fairways are about 10 mils. And greens are about 3. In summer, I lift to about 3.5, but then I'm rolling. Usually about 3.
Yeah. So certainly we've seen that, obviously, higher cut on greens and then corresponding higher cut on fairways. You know, the fairways are getting a little bit lower as well, which is, once again, where you're starting to create that stress on the plant and the leaf, and where disease then starts to be prevalent. So certainly one thing that we're going to be exploring with Dr. Tom again, and through the formation of our toe-behind fairway roller, is starting to treat the fairways where you can maybe, you know, take out a cut on the fairways as well, reduce that stress on the plant, but then create the beneficial things that you're seeing on greens onto the fairways as well, through, you know, reducing dollar spot. Once again, uniformity of moisture as well. We see rolling is certainly benefiting the uniformity of moisture on putting greens, and we would think the same is going to be on fairways. So, yes, it's going to be very interesting to see when we do get these fairway rollers out, that once again, our fairway roller design is going to be a cassette with 3 rollers in the head, just like we have on the smoothing rollers. So bringing those same principles of smoothing and truing the grass on a green onto the fairway, just in a wider format, 10-foot swath, so that you can see those benefits when we're starting to cut down, you know, fairway grasses, or they're getting more stress, and especially in a harsh environment. I'm not going to say harsh environment, but in South Africa or Australia or other places where you do have variations in temperature, and you're trying to keep the grass as healthy as possible.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a bit more about Houghton Golf Club. You've got how many on the team there at the golf club?
We've got a staff of about 24. That's including myself. It's 18 hole. It's with Nicholas, we've got about 66 bunkers, including the two by the driving range. Nicholas came in with quite a funky design for the edges. We had to smooth those over because we had so many guys trying to maintain them. I was using Primo, just to try and stop the growth, and they're quite finicky. So I was hand edging them, but we weren't keeping up. So we thinned them out of it. I've got about 5-6 guys on bunkers. That's alone. That's just looking after them. Keep our bunker depths pretty shallow here. That's about 60 mils. The vases aren't completely black. So every day, bunkers are checked for their levels. At the end of the week, we'll assess which bunkers need sorting out, and that will usually knock out on a Monday. Otherwise, two fairway guys, the edging sprinklers. We've got tees guys, just normal stuff, like two irrigation. I've got a beautiful irrigation system. It's only, 15 years old. And considering what we had before the development, it's awesome. Kikuyu all the way around, obviously, except degree. I used to intercede the tees in winter, but it's really found it unnecessary going forward. So I usually just do our target beams, oversee the driving range. We keep, as soon as it goes over 40, the members will let me know. That's 40 mils. I used to cut them with cylinder mowers. I used to have 4 cylinder mowers. So it was very nice cut, nice look. But it's just too much time. So I've gone to rotary now, using the 35s. And with that, I'm able to free one guy. So now I've just got 3 rotaries, and that other guy, he'll do odd jobs here and there. We've got plenty of trees. A lot of Australian trees, a lot of the gravilla, the eucalyptus, surrounded by jacarandas.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, we've got a lot of tree boles to look after, but it's a good course. You got to be on your game when you play it. You got to be strong.
Yeah, sounds like it. Now with the Kikuyu fairways as well, obviously that have a lot of that grass type in New South Wales here in Australia. And how do you maintain that so it doesn't start growing too? Do you a lot of Primo, or what are you using in relation to getting that lateral growth rather than the vertical growth of the kike?
Well, definitely Primo. We've got Primo and Nomo here as well. It's the same active. It just saves us for cutting. Last season, we broke all records with rain. I feel for those guys in Texas. I'm seeing we weren't that bad, but we broke all records from January to March. We had more rain then than the whole of the previous year. So it was huge, and we couldn't cut a lot of times. And luckily, I had been applying free mode. And if I hadn't, I can tell you now that I would have had to have lifted my fairway units to about 15 and slowly try to cut down. But the thing is, rain only stopped maybe April sometime, but the grounds are so saturated, it was really, it was a trying time, but that Primo saved me. If I hadn't had, it would have been a different story. So now it's, things like that you remember. So it's definitely, it's going into the kit for this year. But I usually scarify the fairways August sometime. As the season starts warming up and we start getting growth, then I'll, I knock areas that will recover quickly. I'm busy with rough now. because no one's going to moan about rap that's sitting at 20.
Yeah.
I feel that if I don't get to it, I'll leap too much for August, September, and then the course really gets messy and then the guys complain. So I take it off in little here and there. Looking forward to the season. Last year, I had a lot of challenges, but you know, every year, if you're a greenkeeper and you love what you're doing, every year you just want to try and better the course. So you want that person, that member to walk away or the guest to walk away and say, wow, this is a really great course. So every year, each and every one of us that's sitting in where I am sitting now that is in agronomy and working on golf courses, they always try and put their best foot forward. And sometimes it doesn't always go that way. You know, you push the envelope and sometimes it can burn your fingers. But you learn, and then the next season you tweak one or two things and, you know, hopefully it goes your way.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the wonderful things about the space we all work in is it's a living, breathing organism that we've got out there as the golf course. And yes, you want to try things and put things in place. The great thing about turf is that it'll generally bounce back, especially hardy grasses in the fairways like kayak and those sort of things. So you can play around with a little bit, but it's all about that. And no matter who I talk to, they're always wanting to get that incremental improvement each year, finding better ways to do things so that, yes, the next season, the member experience or the green fee player experience is improved each time they come out to the course.
I tell you also, in the old days, with the tutor, before I had the tutor, if I'd have any tournaments, club champs, you know, that kind of stuff, I'd start double cutting that week, and then I would, it was probably about 4 days before the actual tournament, I'd double cut in the morning and in the evening. I've had guys sleeping over here, and we're cut till 8 at night. Next morning, wake up at 4 and cut, double cut, and you know, get on the triplex and roll, and someone's got to lift the flag, and you've got to make sure you don't roll over the hole that's been cut. Since I've had the tutor, there's none of that PM double cutting and all that. It's wake up, double cut, have a roll. Mm. No, that's it. It's done.
Yeah. And certainly the benefit of our roller setup allows the leaf to stay flatter for longer during the day. So you're getting that consistency in relation to the roll, the smoothness and trueness for a longer period. So from morning to an afternoon field, they're getting a very similar condition. So that's a really good point of difference, as you point out, with our rollers, is that consistency that you get for longer during the day, which also then does mean as well, you're not needing to do all of those cutting regimes in that pursuit of trying to manufacture an outcome on the grass.
100%. And over December, some of the guys take leave. So I don't go down to, you could call it a skeleton stock. Some guys will take Christmas, some take New Year. And then I will alternate because obviously I've got to cut fairways still and wrap and tees and all. I don't have the start. So then what I'll do on a day when I cut fairways and tees is I'll roll. I walk the greens here. I usually send out 5 guys. So that's 5 extra guys I've got. Guys cutting the fins, they do the rolling. So it's 5 extra guys I've got. So it's more hands on deck. You know, you can throw guys in wrap where you need. And I don't tell the members because then the members say, you got these guys. It's like, it's but the speed's still the same.
That's right. And it is that principle. And Paul Larson's a big proponent of this in the UK about mowing less, rolling more. And where you can add an extra roll in or drop a mow, as you say, most golfers will not be able to see the difference, but you are then allowing the green to become healthier by having a little bit of a rest from being cut. And as you also say, you can utilize those resources that would be out cutting, doing other jobs around the course as well to lift the overall standard.
And then also I will, naturally I'd be on a PGR on the greens as well. So also the amount of clipping that you're removing are so minimal anyway, you know, they're not going to miss a cut. And in the actual fact, now heat, that extra bit of photosynthesizing, you know, the extra carbs goes to the roots. It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Stuart, just tell us a little bit. Obviously, you've been with Houghton Golf Club now for a while, but what got you into greenkeeping at the start of your career?
Well, it's quite a long story, but the short and the long of it is my gran was a landscaper, and I worked with my gran and my mom. And then my school holidays weren't sitting in front of TV. I was busy helping in the garden and fertilizing and putting plants in pots and going with her and helping her. And so that's kind of how I got introduced to, you could say, into horticulture. She had green fingers. She was very arty as well. She could draw whatever she could plant. It's kind of, I did some traveling overseas, and I worked doing landscaping in some forestry companies, and I just loved it. I came back and thought that's what I want to do. I studied at university landscaping, and one of the subjects was turf grass, and I felt like a magnetic pull to it. There were guys in my class that were rolling their eyes, but I just couldn't get enough of it, so much so that one of my friends was dating a girl whose dad was a president of a bowling club. And I knew him, and I said, listen, this is what I'm doing. Would you mind if I looked after your greens pro bono? He said, go for it. And the rest is history.
Yeah, that's great. That's amazing, isn't it? The way that obviously the family connection, but then going out there looking after bowling green and look at you now.
Yeah, look, I did all kinds of stuff. I did hydraulics as well. I did mechanical engineering. I worked in workshops, going to these big hydraulic places where they'd use hydraulics. You know, like you've got a company called Tiger Wheel and Tire and that. And, you go and do power cacks and you'd spend your day inside a factory. And I just hated it. And I knew something had to change. And I changed it. And like I said, one step in front of the next, and here I am now. And I find myself giving the same advice to the youngsters, But don't see what's out there, It's something, if you've got a passion, just go for it, It's not going to just fall into a lap,
Where was your first superintendent role?
In 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
So I was an assistant to Jock Tame, who was a superintendent at Houghton. And then before I was studying, I was working at other courses, but I was assistant here.
Mm.
And then they closed for redevelopment about two years later, 2006, 2007. Now I was with the construction crew when they rebuilt the place. And then, took over afterwards and been here ever since.
Yeah. South Africa's got such a great, rich history in golf, and whether it's from Ernie Els to Aldrich Podgotter, who just won recently, there's a rich history in professional golf and amateur golf out of South Africa. What are some of the, challenges that you're seeing from a greenkeeping perspective in South Africa at this stage with golf clubs?
Dare I say budgets, but I think that's universal. Equipment and prices, labor, it's I don't think we're far off from the States. I'm seeing a lot of words of the guys complaining about you get labor trying to keep them. I'd say it's the same as every other course out. We've all got our issues. One thing I am lucky about is that I've got a Pogo moisture meter here. I never used to have moisture meters before. That's really turned the greens around, especially with the undulation.
Yeah.
The Pogo, the subscription's quite a bit, and every time you replace those heads quite a bit, that it's worth it. And I always back it up, for the committee and say, listen, lads, instead of me opening up 10 minutes of water for the greens, there's just an area, maybe 50 squares, that you know, scratching, I just need to get those areas, and Pogo will show that to us. So, you know, a lot of other clubs can't afford it. So I am relatively lucky in that regard. I can afford some goodies. We're not as constricted as other clubs. Hence, we have the tree turf, and you know we are getting secondhand machinery. I think Houghton's in a strong position. It's a strong club, and it's not going to go anywhere.
Excellent. Yeah, and look, it's always good when you can go to that committee or owners with data-driven discussions. It makes it certainly a lot easier, provides you with the necessary tools and numbers that you can do to put forward. So certainly for those listening and around the place, wherever you can get that access to that data or data, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, it certainly does make those conversations a lot easier and backs up what your gut, I suppose, is telling you that's happening out on the golf course.
100%.
Yeah. How do you go? You just said before as well, it's obviously a heavily tree-lined course. How do you go with managing, you know, those shade aspects, or are you you're pretty lucky in that regard? It doesn't cause too much issue with the turf.
Well, like I said, we got 10 A1, A4, and some Poa. So, that's the issue. Poa loves shade. Besides water, loves shade. Where we got shady areas around greens, we unfortunately do have quite a bit of power. There was one fee that we had to, but the power is just taking over really. So the committee agreed and we removed that one tree. The beautiful big trees, you know, it's a shame when they do fall. We had a couple fall in this year due to all the rain. The blue cup to get a kind of a fungus or fungal disease in their roots. So unfortunately you can't see it, but when it falls then you see it's got no root structure. But some beautiful blue gums. This area used to be a blue gum plantation. We've got blue gums that are, I'd say, well over 100 years.
Wow. Yep.
So the only thing with blue gums is they're quite thirsty. They can have up to 200 liters of water a day. So where we do have tight fairways, you can clearly see where the kikuyu starts stressing, because kikuyu is also a bit of a water loving plant. I just increased the runtime on that particular area, and if anything the blue gums are an integral part of Houghton, and they are messy trees, but you know the protection factor that they offer is phenomenal.
No. Yeah.
It's good trees, and Houghton's known for their blue gums.
So you're in your winter period at the moment. You talk about the season upcoming. What changes from an out of season to in season? Obviously, hopefully growth is a little bit less on the kayak and other places at the moment. So maybe the cuttings a little less at this time of the year. But what changes for you when you're going into the season or into the golfing season in South Africa?
Well, firstly, I'd have more staff because I've got half my guys on leave. But everything changes. It's everything. As I was telling my manager the other day, August, I have a chat to the guys, come on guys, and I'm assuming we'll knock it out the park. By the time we finish, we're all frothing at the mouth and we're running out with mowers and we're cutting them. But the way we start the season is the standard I want to keep. So it's always in my mind, I always try and keep it as high as possible. So it means try to knock out the greens. This year I want to try and do a ninja time or a viper time. It's only a 7-mole hole. My main aeration is going to be in December. Cutting, everything's, we just try and put our best foot forward. The rains haven't come yet. So we're okay, we can sit back, we fertilize. When I say sit back, we're not chasing our tails.
Yeah.
we really just wait for the rains, the course greens up, and then it becomes quite brutally hot before the rains do come. That's where the pogo works overtime. That's when we get ET rates of 10 plus, which is crazy. It's scary. You're a pogo in the morning and you're sitting on 25%, and that afternoon you're on like 10 or 11%. So, so we're right now, we're knocking out a lot. We're doing a lot of pruning. I'm going to do a lot of drainage soon. I wanted areas to recover. So that's why I pushed it out a little bit later. So we'll start that kind of end of July. So a lot of attention to detail stuff that we don't usually get to during the grain season. Because when the grain season starts, it's crazy. You know? Every guy's got his division that he has to look after and maintain. And, you know, you can't fall behind. You just can't, because it just snowballs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you were just before we started the conversation, you're talking about the temperature variations. Obviously, winter over there at the moment, so it is quite cool. People don't think of Africa as being a cool place, but South Africa, it still gets cool. As you then touched on, you do get those very hot days in summer as well. So, how do you? It's always a balancing act, I suppose, managing those temperature variations. Do you get any frost or anything else at the golf club at this time of the year, or is that barely minimal?
Anna asked me earlier in an email to send some pics. I'll send some I took off last Saturday. It looked like snow. We were completely white. So across the almost an everyday occurrence. The past 2 days we've had a bit of cloud cover, so I'm assuming it's kept in a bit of the heat. But no, it gets pretty cold, and especially that wind chill. We'll have to lay off sometimes with a little bit of cutting greens, you know, wait till they start to thaw out a bit. But no, it gets cold. It really gets cold.
And in Johannesburg as well, at the end of in the summer, you get those extremes of temperature as well.
Yes. Johannesburg, I've grown up here, and I remember, being a kid and putting on just sunblock on my shoulders and maybe my nose. And you've got away with it. Sun's definitely changed. Seasons have definitely changed. You know, we used to holothon religiously end of August. And then the greens would be growing. Now you can get a cold snap middle of September and your greens will just stop. So it hasn't become that sure bet. No, like, this is what's going to happen then. You know, we just find that although you still get your seasons, we just find shorter autumn, spring, longer summers, and our winds used to come in August. Now they come kind of the September, October. The things have changed a bit, but the heat is that's one thing I've noticed as well. It's got a lot. 30 degrees, that used to be us, now we're 34, 35, and it will be for a period, it'll be for like a 2 week period.
Always challenges out there, aren't they? So you mentioned before, talking to some of your junior staff, they encourage them to try many things. I suppose looking back from where you are now, Stuart, to where you were at starting out in the horticulture game, would that be advice be the same from the older self to the younger self?
If I understand you correctly.
So what would you have told yourself if you have the knowledge that you got now? And you were talking to yourself as a younger man starting out the game, what would your advice be to your younger self?
Read more. Read more too. I can sit for hours just reading about two different guys' experiences. Because you never know you never know what you're gonna come up against. You never know what's something will happen. You get a spanning works. But then you'll read about what someone's had that same problem, or someone's prepared for a tournament this way. And, you'll just kind of put that in your bucket, and then you'll mix it around and you'll say, well, let me try this. That's what this reading about turf, and I just can't get enough of it. I really enjoy reading about it. And my latest is fungicides now. I'm just getting to fungicides. you know, we've always had our your programs and, you know, certain things, but now I'm fascinated in how they work and all that stuff. So reading, I tell guys read.
No, that's a really good piece of advice. And the great thing now, you know, the internet or whether it's publications or whatever the case may be, through your associations as well, there is so much literature out there that you can consume to, you know, find out about different practices and how they may benefit your facility. So that's very good advice. Well, Stuart, thank you very much. That's been a great conversation. We enjoyed it immensely. We wish you every success for the upcoming season at Houghton Golf Club. And thanks for being a guest on the Super Series.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for inviting me again. And I'll send you those pics and videos of when I roll again.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, please send us through some pictures. That would be